joining me now on this edition of Our Town, Andy Vabora with Travel Lane County, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Dune Restoration Project. Now, the dunes back, you know, what, almost 100 years ago, was it, or maybe a little bit longer than that, when they decided to try to stop the dune movement from happening, or the movement of the dunes, I should say.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where you just kind of unintended consequences, but, you know, as development was happening along the coast, the Highway 101 was being built, and you're trying to control the river kind of flows a little bit. They decided that they needed to protect those assets, and so there was a move to plant European beach grass, which is not native to the United States. And that stuff does a great job of stabilizing the dunes. So it accomplished what they wanted, to keep that moving sand from covering up the highway or messing with their jetties and other infrastructure. And the unintended consequence was that it really changed the natural processes that were happening in those dunes areas.
So what are some of the negative things that it caused? I mean, obviously there was probably some habitats that were affected by this, but what were some of the other things that were caused by bringing this grass in?
Once the grass gets established, then other plants begin to grow. And so I think everybody that's been out to the dunes has seen this. You'll see some of the grassy areas, and then you'll see smaller shrub areas, and then eventually larger pine trees, and it becomes basically a forest that really kind of anchors the sand and cuts off the natural sand movement that would happen through the changing of the seasons as the winds change from north to south, from south to north. And so that sand that would blow in and move around is cut off from the inland areas, and you get this really dense forest area, basically, that takes over all that open sand. And so the tens of thousands of acres that are within the Oregon Dunes National Recreation Area have, you know, virtually been lost. I mean, I think some of the estimates are upwards of 80 to 85% of the open sands have now been turned into these forested shrub areas. And so it changes the landscape dramatically in terms of the natural plant life and the animals that were living there, and introduces new things that maybe shouldn't have been there, which we've had to deal with as a collaborative and working with the Forest Service on things like the coastal marten that has now kind of moved in and taken residence in some of these shrubby areas.
So when you think about what was initially there, you said, you know, about 80% now, this must have been just totally sand dunes at one point, then, you would think.
It's the largest temperate coastal sand dune area in the North America, and it's a real special area, and you can get a little glimpse of that. Obviously there's some pretty big open sand areas that are left that people like to recreate on, and you know, just imagine that for, you know, all the way from Florence down to Coos Bay. That's what it looked like. We've got aerial photographs, and people can take a look at this on our website, that have been taken over time just to show that encroachment as these invasive plants have taken over. So it would have been a real spectacular area. And so that's kind of where the Oregon Dunes Restoration Collaborative took shape, was to say, you know, if we don't do something now, we're going to lose the little bit of open sand we have left. So what are the things we can do to preserve those areas that we do have remaining, and then work towards restoring some areas where we can maybe get some of that open sand moving again?
Well, obviously, it's been a lot of years allowed to happen. And I've talked with people before that talked about how this invasive grass is just, it's almost impossible to get rid of. What are the hopes percentage-wise? I mean, obviously, it can't go back to the way it was probably ever, especially with all, you know, the homes and everything that are here now and the roadways and stuff like that. What is the hope?
Well, we developed three main goals, one being preserve the best of what we have left. So those open areas that people are familiar with, we want to be sure that those remain open sand. And so that means working around the edges as those invasive plants try to encroach on those areas. And a big part of that is working with private landowners as well. And the Forest Service, and we have a weed management area group that works hard to educate private landowners about these invasive species and to work with them to keep those areas clear. So preserving the best is certainly our top priority at this point, because you're absolutely right. It's going to be hard to reclaim any significant portions of the open sand areas that were there in the past. And, you know, one of the things that complicates that, and we can talk more about that, is, again, just the introduction of the coastal marten down onto the sand dunes into these areas where those martens used to live up in the forest and still do. And then other kind of restoration projects, the Forest Service does a really good job, and there are some treatments for the grass. It has to be done sensitively because they are using herbicides, but they do a fair amount of treatment of those grasses, and they have to keep coming back and retreating those areas, but it has proven successful. And if you can nip it at the bud at that point, then the larger plants and trees don't get started. So that's our second goal, is to continue to work towards treating those areas as best we can to keep it from encroaching more into the open sand areas. The last area, which we had really hoped and had a lot of excitement around, was what we call landscape level restoration, which is really going to that forested area along the foredune there that has been created by the invasive plants and basically cutting through it and reestablishing those kind of inner areas where the sand is still open back to the actual shoreline, which allows that sand movement to happen more naturally the way it did before. Unfortunately, again, with the discovery of the marten, we're not really able to do that. And a couple of areas where there has been some, you know, larger level restoration work done has been real successful with other species like some of the shorebirds and things like that. So it's really a disappointment to the group that we're probably in the short term not going to be able to do any of the landscape level restoration. So we'll really focus on the preserve the best and then working on site-specific restoration projects.
Well, and the people involved with the project themselves are environmentally aware, right? So, I mean, it's not like they're fighting against those that want to protect the marten. They're just trying to figure out ways to do both, right?
That's exactly right. We certainly recognize the sensitive position the marten is in. There's a very small population of them left, and you know, it's not their fault that we created this problem and introduced forested areas down on the dunes where they find it really a good spot for them to habitate. So it's just a balancing act. And again, the more that the Forest Service and Fish and Wildlife and others learn about the marten, where its habitat is, you know, we're hopeful that we'll be able to find some areas down the road, you know, between Florence and Coos Bay is a lot of miles, and so we're hopeful that we can find some areas where we can do some of that landscape level restoration and see if we can get that open sand moving again as it did in the past.
Have there been studies done to try to determine, you know, what would happen if it were all left alone? Like what kind of a time frame there would be if nothing were done?
You know, we tried to do some estimates based on those aerial photographs and looking back historically as how fast the invasive plants have taken over the open sand. And it appears it's somewhere in the neighborhood of about 16 feet a year that the native plants the invasive plants were taking over the open sand. And so it would be probably within a generation that, you know, all of it would be changed forever.
Now, some of the work that's been done, some of it, is it correct to say some of it's been done by hand, some of it's been done by machine?
There is a lot done by hand. And the Restoration Collaborative, through the interns or placements we had through the Rare AmeriCorps program, we've had two really great gentlemen who have worked with us through that program over the past 3 years. Have organized work parties, generally starting about May and lasting till fall, and going out on the dunes every couple of weeks and doing hand projects. And it's mostly cutting out Scotch broom and gorse. Obviously, you know, volunteers, we're not going to be out trying to do anything with the grass. We'll leave that to the Forest Service. And then there have been other work parties with rider groups like Save the Riders Dunes has worked with the Forest Service to do some pretty big projects, cutting down shore pine and Scotch broom and gorse again down in the southern part of the recreation area. But and those have, you know, shown to be successful. It's just one of those things where you have to keep coming back and stay after it. But there's been some areas that have been opened up, again, smaller, you know, 5-10 acre areas that these volunteers have worked in that, you know, have been pretty successful. But we recognize that, you know, 5-10 acres at a time, when you're talking about tens of thousands of acres that you hope to open up, isn't going to get it done. So the Forest Service is doing hundreds of acres a year. And our hope was this coming year, through, if we were successful getting some grant funds, we could get some work parties out there that would spend a more intensive amount of time, you know, more than the couple hours our volunteers put out every couple of weeks during the summer. So we were excited that, you know, coming up over this next maybe 1 to 2 years, we'll be able to do that through some youth corps programs.
Obviously, when you're working on 10 acres here or there, there's another 10 acres that continue to grow. And obviously, that can be a big problem. But you mentioned, you know, late spring, summer, early fall. Is there a dormancy period for any of this grass? Or because of the temperate nature here, does it just continue to grow even during the obviously times when you can't necessarily get out on the dunes to work on it?
I'd have to defer to the Forest Service botanists on that. But, you know, I think intuitively it probably doesn't grow quite as fast in the winter as it does maybe in the summertime. But again, the Forest Service has limited windows when, again, they can treat as well, because they have to have the right conditions to be able to treat or to burn. They do some burning of the forests along there too, as one of their treatment options. So they have some kind of limited windows when they can do those things and get out there and work. So for us, looking ahead to some of the work that we'll be doing with the Youth Corps, it'll probably be in that late spring or early summer period as well.
Well, obviously, one of the reasons why you wanted to talk about this was to inform the public of the need and what's going on. What are some other things the public can do to take part in or to help in order to, you know, make this more viable, make this a more successful thing?
Well, there's probably several. Certainly, we always encourage people to volunteer. So on our website, saveoregondunes.org, you can sign up to be a volunteer. And that doesn't mean just pulling, you know, cutting down Scotch broom and gorse. We need people that are just passionate about the dunes that would table for us at different community events, maybe help our folks distribute materials. We have collateral materials that we distribute to businesses up and down the coast to educate people about our work. So we always encourage people to sign up and volunteer. You know, cash donations are appreciated. We can talk a little bit about the grants that we were just notified that we'll be receiving. Those grants require matches often. Some of that can be in-kind work, the volunteer hours that were put in. Sometimes that has to be cash. So it's nice to have some cash on hand to be able to match grants when they come in or to buy new tools, et cetera. The other thing we're really looking for right now is we are not participating with the U of O's RARE program this year. And so we're looking for a program coordinator. The Forest Service has dedicated some funding, and then through some of these grants that we just obtained, we're able to hire someone probably three-quarter time and help us with organizing those volunteer work parties, recruiting volunteers in the community, distributing those collateral materials, keeping up our website and our social media channels and things like that. So we're looking for someone to take on that position and work with us to help coordinate the collaborative's effort. So that's certainly one thing we would encourage people to, again, go to our website, click on the news tab. There's a little short description of that program's coordinator position and a link to a longer description of that position. We're hoping that we can find somebody that lives over on the coast. Our rare placements have been housed here at Travel Lane County in Eugene and then had to travel to the coast when they were doing the different work parties, distributing collateral, et cetera. And so ideally, we'd want somebody that lives over on the coast and has quicker access to move up and down the coast, and also just to get to know the community better and the volunteers that live over in that area. So there's a few things that we're looking for immediately. And want to spread the word and get more people educated about the need. SaveOregonDunes.org.
Now, what about the grants that you've received? Where did they come from?
The lion's share of the grant money we got was through what's called Title II funds. And so these are funds that come through the Secure Rural Schools Act that come back to the Forest Service and are kind of dedicated towards restoration and habitat enhancement projects. And so you'll have groups like watershed councils and others that apply for these funds to do different projects up and down the coast and in the forest. And so we were encouraged to, put our oar in the water and see what we could come up with. And it has like a 5-year window in which you can use those funds. And so we were thinking about what if we could get some youth corps groups to come out and do, week-long work efforts, one or two weeks a summer over the next 5 years. And so that's how we built our budget and made a request, in addition to some funding to help supplement the funds we got for this coordinator position. And lo and behold, we got all of what we asked for. So that was a tremendous surprise, and we're really excited about that. And so we're looking at contracting with Northwest Youth Corps and then through the AmeriCorps program, which brings a team out of, I think their nearest office is out of Sacramento, but we're also looking at working with Northwest Youth Corps, which is based here in Eugene. So a couple different programs who would come out to the coast and spend a dedicated week of time with a team of anywhere from 6 to 12 individuals working on specific areas. And so we believe we can get a lot of work done with those contracts.
Well, it certainly is a good and valiant effort to try to do that. And again, getting all the money you asked for in grants is kind of very unusual. So you did luck out on that one there for sure.
We did. And it's something that comes up at different times through the Forest Service. And we'll continue to look to that, because I think that was one of the challenges that the collaborative saw was, the volunteer work parties are great, and it educates people, it keeps them involved, but to really kind of make some headway, I think these larger work parties are going to really help out. And then clearly the great work that the Forest Service does, and I really want to give a shout out to them. They've been super supportive in terms of helping us with funding, as well as staff oversight to help prioritizing some of the work areas that we've outlined in our planning. They just are a great partner.
Well, Andy, if there's anything else that we didn't touch on that you want to mention, feel free to do that now. Otherwise, we sure do appreciate you coming by and giving us this information.
I can't think of anything else right now. I just really appreciate the opportunity to speak to this. And again, just encourage folks to go to our website, learn more about the project and the efforts. And if you know somebody that might make a great candidate for our programs coordinator, please pass that along, and we'd love to talk to them.
All right, Andy Vora, thank you so much, and have yourself a great day.
Thank you, George. You have a great day as well.
Dr. Willie Foster with Peace Harbor Hospital is coming up next, talking more COVID and seeing what's happening over there.